And then he criticizes, saying this enterprise has at its heart the belief that a statistician, I think you could equivalently say physicist here, by imagination and by looking at the data, can invent a reasonably good model for a complex mechanism devised by nature. Okay, so, you know, that had, you know, worked pretty well for Newton, worked pretty well for Einstein, but he's saying, you know, when you get into image and speech and financial markets, this doesn't really work so well anymore. But as a physicist, I was trained as a physicist, and usually when you have a complicated system, what you're trained to do is figure out how to simplify it and something that captures the essence of the system. And we have a joke in physics where we talk about the spherical cow. You know, you get like a problem, there's a problem in a physics textbook about what's the probability that, you know, a cow gets struck by lightning, and that cow's too complicated. So the first thing you do is approximate the cow with a sphere, and then you do some calculations and, you know, you get roughly the right answer. So that's where that joke comes from. And so both statisticians and physicists and various kinds of scientists have a long tradition of coming up with good simplifying assumptions. But he's basically saying that is kind of that's over. You know, we should just ditch that, forget trying to understand things, and we have this new machine learning black box thing. And as long as you have a lot of data, I can train it, and it's really good at making predictions. And so we should just forget about understanding stuff, and we should just be happy with the black box. Now, George Box, who is a famous statistician at UW-Madison, has this famous quote that all models are wrong, but some are useful. So that's like the spherical cow, right? The spherical cow, maybe it's not perfect, but it's useful. You can reason about it. You get pretty good approximations and things like that. But as the big data was taking off and machine learning was taking off, there's the rejoinder quote from Peter Norvig at Google, who says all models are wrong and increasingly you can succeed without them. It's really like this big change about like, what do we mean by doing science? It's just kind of like the attitude at this time was essentially you can give up with understanding and just replace things with a black box and a bunch of data. And there were even this paper from 2008 saying that the data deluge is making the scientific method obsolete. So, I mean, this was in Wired magazine. So it was a big deal. And so I think we're living with the legacy of that big data, those 10 years of big data and all this idea that just a bunch of data is going to replace humans and replace theory and everything. And I will just say strongly that I don't agree with that at all. Okay. But it's hard to go into a talk like this without thinking that that's essentially going to be my message, because it's the continuation. You still have AI and you still have science, but I want to draw this distinction between the way that people were thinking about it in the kind of 2000s. So my claim is that data and AI are definitely not enough. And you might ask, you know, why aren't they enough? And the short version of it is, as I'm sure many of you already know, that causation is not correlation. Okay, and when you really get into science, causation is critically important. And what is happening in these models with the AI models with a bunch of data is essentially at least the what was happening at the time that in the 2010s and this kind of big data time was association is like correlation. You just look at a bunch of data, you look at, you know, relationships between things, and there's a very well-known researcher named Judea Pearl. This is a figure from his book called The Book of Why, talking all about how, you know, causation is really important. And so he has this ladder of causality, and the lowest rung of the ladder he calls association. It's sort of seeing or observing. And just that you see that, for instance, cancer and smoking are related to each other, but to be able to say that there's something causal happening, like, you know, it's the leaves are blowing and it's windy. And if you ask a little kid, you know, like, you know, why is it windy? Like, occasionally kids will say, because the leaves are shaking, right? Like, maybe not, that's not the causal story, right? So higher in this ladder of thinking is the idea of being able to do interventions. So you have higher level kinds of questions, like, what would happen if I did the following? You know, what would happen if I went on a diet or I took an aspirin or something? That's not, you're intervening in the system, and so you're really changing things, and it's a different kind of question. And then there are even higher level questions called counterfactuals. It's a big $1,000 word, but it's very similar when you talk about like the basis of law. Like, you're asking like, what would have happened if you had done something different? So counter to what you actually did, counterfactual. And so these are even a more difficult kind of question to ask, but they're again at the heart of doing science.